glared at him. "I've asked for an emergency meeting of the board, but they're taking their sweet time getting everybody together."
"Perhaps."
"They know Doug can't live on Earth," Joanna blurted. "He'll be a marked man."
"We'll be able to protect him," Brudnoy assured her. But Joanna shook her head.
"No, they'll get to him. Fanatics, assassins. Just because he's got nanomachines in his body, they'll kill him sooner or later."
"Zimmerman won't be safe from the nano-Luddites either," Brudnoy pointed out. With a sigh, he added, "None of us will."
"We can't let them send us back to Earth, Lev. It'd be a death sentence for Doug, for Zimmerman, for all of us."
"If only..." The phone chime interrupted Brudnoy.
"Answer," Joanna snapped.
The phone's computer voice said, "Call from Mr. Rashid in Savannah."
"Put him on."
Ibrahim al-Rashid's swarthy face with its trim little beard appeared on the wall screen. To Brudnoy, the man looked like the crafty pirate chieftain of his childhood tapes. He smiled at Joanna.
"You'll be pleased to know that the emergency board meeting is scheduled to start in 10 minutes.
Joanna sank back onto the couch beside her husband.
"Good," she breathed. "Good."
Touchdown minus 8 hours, 57 minutes. Rashid hated these electronic meetings. He sat at the head of the nearly empty board table while the walls around him displayed the images of directors who were in their homes or offices in California, London, Buenos Aires, the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and one, of course, on the moon. Only 3 of Masterson Corporation's directors lived close enough to Savannah to come to this emergency meeting in person, and one of them had to be ferried by a special medevac tilt-rotor plane because he was on life support awaiting a heart transplant.
"We have got to get the World Court to issue an injunction to stop the peacekeepers from invading Moonbase," Joanna was saying, her voice urgent, somewhere between cajoling and pleading.
Magruder, the old man on life support, wheezing through his clear plastic oxygen mask, said testily,
"The World Court doesn't work that way. They have no power to issue injunctions or control the peacekeepers."
"Only Foray can direct the peacekeepers," said the director from London,
a well-preserved matron whom Rashid had pursued amorously from time to time. With the oversight of the General Assembly, the man from California added, "If they don't like the way he's handling things, they can override him or even replace him." Fat chance, Rashid thought. Tamara Bonai, sitting on her patio on Tarawa, with palm trees behind her swaying in the trade wind, asked,
"But what about the news media? Couldn't we put some pressure on the UN by exposing this plot to the media?"
Rashid said, "Most of the world's media has been effectively muzzled by Foray. Here in the United States, the media executives I've talked to tend to see this as a struggle between a giant corporation, which is bad by definition, against the poor people of the world, represented by Foray and the UN." Joanna's anguished face almost filled the far wall of the boardroom, like a giant portrait or a hovering djinn.
"Do you mean that they're ignoring our Declaration of Independence?" Joanna demanded.
"Yes," said Rashid, dipping his chin slightly. "They see it as a transparent ploy of Masterson Corporation to maintain control of Moonbase and continue using nanotechnology." The meeting room fell silent. What Rashid had told his board was not entirely true, he knew. Yes, the media executives he had spoken with knew that Masterson still controlled Moonbase, despite the legal fiction that the base was owned by the Kiribati Corporation. Tamara Bonai's beauty and earnestness were not enough to disguise the maneuver that the Moonbase people had pulled to evade the nanotech treaty. But when Rashid had met with his friends among the news media in New York to brief them on the Moonbase situation, he had conveniently overlooked the independence angle. And from all the communications beamed from Moonbase to Masterson Corporation headquarters in Savannah, Rashid had carefully excised all mention of independence before sending them on to the news outlets. Of all the members of Masterson's board of directors, Rashid was the least surprised to learn that Yamagata was behind Foray's grab of Moonbase. "Let them have Moonbase," he thought. "We still have the patents on the clipper ships. Let Yamagata manufacture them with nanomachines on the moon, we will still get the patent royalties, and our costs will drop to zero. Nothing but profit for us. And of course, sooner or later, Yamagata will want to initiate a merger with Masterson Corporation. That's when I will become wealthy enough to retire in true style. Joanna's insistent voice snapped him out of his pleasant reverie.
Once the peacekeeper troops land here and take over the base, we won't have a chance of stopping Foray from turning Moonbase over to Yamagata.
We will be compensated for the takeover, Rashid pointed out. And now we have to wait 3 infernal seconds for her reply, he grumbled to himself. Joanna stared down the length of the conference table at him, her eyes ablaze.
Compensated? You mean it's all right with you if Foray screws us as long as he pays for the pleasure?
Rashid's own temper rose, but he maintained his composure.
I believe it is an ancient piece of Oriental wisdom, Joanna. When rape is unavoidable, you might as well relax and enjoy it.
Joanna stared into Rashid's beady eyes and battled with every ounce of self-control she possessed to keep from screaming at him. All across the walls of her living room, the images of the board members were watching her, some sympathetic, some apathetic, a few looking tense with apprehension.
Omar, she said, deliberately using Rashid's belittling nickname, you might enjoy getting raped, but I don't, and I don't think the other members of this board do either.
Raising her voice slightly, she said,
I move we take a vote of confidence in our chairman.
For 3 tense seconds, she waited for a response. None came. No one seconded her motion. Brudnoy, sitting off in a corner of the room where the camera could not pick him up, looked at her with growing pain in his expression.
That's it,
Joanna told herself. Rashid's in control of the board and I'm not. He's been using this crisis to solidify his position and undermine mine.
Very well,
Joanna said at last. It's clear that this board is not going to support Moonbase. We'll have to defend ourselves in spite of you. When Rashid heard her words, he smiled thinly.
And how do you propose to defend Moonbase, may I ask?
We'll fight with everything we've got.
Rashid's smile widened.
You sound like Churchill after Dunkirk, Joanna. We shall fight them on the beaches and the landing fields. We shall fight them in the cities and the streets. Do you intend to turn Moonbase into a battlefield?
If I have to, she snapped.
Before Rashid could respond, she added,
Churchill won his war. I intend to win mine.
And she banged the manual switch that cut off the transmission. The smart walls went dark. Brudnoy got up from his chair and walked across the small room to sit beside his wife.
At the end of that famous speech that Churchill gave, he said, he supposedly added under his breath that the British would have to throw beer bottles at the Nazis because that's all they had left to fight with.
Joanna looked into his sad eyes.
We don't even have beer bottles, I'm afraid, Brudnoy said softly.
I know, said Joanna,
fighting back the tears that wanted to fill her eyes.
I know.
Touchdown minus 6 hours, 11 minutes. Captain Munasinghe pushed the plastic plug deeper into his ear and waited impatiently for his laptop to finish decoding the message from New York. At last the computer's synthesized voice said, Commander-in-Chief, United Nations Peacekeeping Forces to Commander, Lunar Expeditionary Force. Urgent and top secret. Message begins. Latest intelligence on enemy intentions. Sources indicate Moonbase will resist your force with all means available to them. You are advised to take every precaution and to be prepared for armed resistance. Message ends. Munasinghe nodded to himself and glanced at the American newswoman sitting across the aisle from him. She seemed deep in earnest conversation over her own comlink back to Earth. He floated out of his chair, fighting back the queasiness that still assailed him whenever he moved. Hovering in the aisle next to his second-in-command, he said,
Start them checking their weapons.
Now? The Norwegian lieutenant blinked his ice-blue eyes at Munasinghe.